There will be no personal nor direct attacks on anyone. And I would ask that you please try to keep down the loud cheering and the clapping. There will be no booing and no unruly behavior. With that,
this is painful, and it will be for a long time.
Donald Trump, baby! That's right, this man knows what's up!
After all, these are a couple of high-stepping turkeys, and you know what to say about a high-stepper. No step too high for a high-stepper.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
Well, Sean's a tough guy. I mean, I think everybody knows that. You know, Sean, he took some licks. He hangs in there.
Yeah, what's wrong with the deal we got? I mean, the deal we got drank pretty good, don't it?
Did you hear what I said?
So this is a brave council. I had no doubt about them.
That doesn't suck.
If you don't like it, too bad.
Last question. Were you high on drugs?
Last question. Kiss my...
Right, here we go. FM Talk 106.5 at Midday Mobile. Glad to have you along. And this hour, like it's been for, well, 16-plus years, the phone number 343-0106, 343-0106 for a call or a text. Or if you want to get fancy, FM Talk 106.5 app, if you're on the, what they call it, the landing page, the front page, the thing that comes up on the app, you'll see on the bottom there, there's a microphone icon. If you press that, lets you record a message, emails it to the show, and can play it back here on the air for everyone to enjoy. All right, so just take that into account. All right, I mentioned this at the beginning of the show, and great to get this man on, and it has been, I mean, it's cliche to say this, but it's been too long since I've had him in the studio. Award-winning broadcaster, journalist, author, musician, champion of the veterans, soon to be a retired dude after a year or two in the broadcast business, all-around righteous dude and a buddy. Bill Riles joins us from WKRG. Hey, Bill.
Well, thank you, Sean. Pleasure to be here.
Matt, it's good to have you in here. You know, thinking about conversations we've had over time, talked about news stories and things that were going on at WKRG. Also talked about books.
Yeah.
Author.
Yes, we have. Yeah.
You and I have talked about music.
Yep.
You know, I mean, you're a Renaissance man, interested in many things.
I've been called a lot worse.
Yeah, it's not bad. I can't spell it, but I can say it.
Right.
Yeah. A Renaissance man. And the way I add this up from when you started, and Bill's one of us. So what I mean is, when I meet people in TV, and I have people in TV I'm friends with that don't have this on their resume, but when I meet somebody who came from the radio ranks, I go, okay, let's talk.
Yeah.
Right? There's a certain thing, I don't know what it is, but broadcasters that come out of radio and then go and tell, I'm like, okay, I can talk to that person right
away.
Well,
you know, there are people who go to school for 4 years to try to learn to broadcast,
mm-hmm.
and I think I learned it all on a Saturday morning at WROX-AM in Clarksdale, Mississippi, and that just kind of threw you to the wolves, and you know, that's just where it was. I just learned all about broadcasting and radio. That was my first job. And as you know, way back in the day, you had to have a license.
Oh, yes. That manila paper.
That's it.
Yeah.
Still have it.
Yeah. I don't know where mine is.
Third class broadcast endorsed FCC license. You had to go take a test. I took it. Had to be driven to Memphis, Tennessee by a friend of mine to take the test.
Because you were how old?
14. I was 14 years old.
I thought I was young getting in, but I'm not even close.
I was 14, and I had a friend of mine in Oxford, Mississippi, who had taken me. He worked at a radio station part-time, and he took me to the radio station one weekend, and I'm like, this is it.
I like this.
It was an FM station, stacks of albums everywhere, back turntables. I'm like, this is it. This is what I'm going to do. And so I said, how do you do this? You got to go get your license. I'm like, okay. So went to Memphis. Took the test, passed the test. A couple weeks later, my license comes in the mail, and I was ecstatic.
You remember seeing that thing? I remember, like, I got mine while I was a student at the university, and you get it, and you're like, look at this thing here.
Absolutely.
I'm official. I can run a VHF radio and a radio
can
station.
Can do it all, yeah. And so immediately after that, had same friend drive me to Clarksdale, Mississippi. It was 30 miles. It's 30 from my hometown, Tunica, Mississippi. It was 30 minutes to Memphis.
Okay.
It's 30 minutes to Clarksdale.
Okay.
So we're
in
the middle there.
Equidistant, as
drove,
they say.
Drove me to Clarksdale, and I walked into WROX, and I said, hey, look at my license.
I got a license. Where's my job?
And they were like, are you free on Saturday and Sunday mornings? I'm like, sure am. Said, you're hired.
You know, that's my worry, too, with this business. Like, you know, we're this kind of weird independent thing, and we have all these live shows every day of the week and do all this. We're really an anomaly anymore. But where you got it, where Dalton got into radio, where I got into radio, dang Saturday mornings mm-hmm. because the people worked all week. They did not want to work Saturday morning or Sunday morning. And they were looking for somebody. And that was a place you got started. Saturday and Sunday mornings, if somebody got into Radio Young, that's where you got in.
Exactly. And most of that was not even talking on the radio, like you know, being a disc jockey.
Pressing
most of
buttons.
That was just running the board, pushing in the commercials and the cart machines.
Yes.
Well, there's a prehistoric term.
It makes me, when I can feel I can see the light coming on when you say cart machine, I can see the end of tone light coming on the studio ready to press play on the next one.
Exactly. And then, of course, Sunday morning, you're running all the Sunday morning church broadcasts, mm-hmm. and you got football and all of those things, and you're just punching in commercials. You might do a live station ID at the top of every hour.
Remember that? Did you get nervous before you did that?
I got you know, when I was really nervous first time I went on the radio, and the first 1 or 2 weekends, you know, you had to do your plate voltage and mm-hmm. all that, record
all
that.
Take your readings, yeah.
Your logs.
Yes.
The logs are all written down. And the transmitter went out.
Oh,
and
gosh.
I'm like, so I called up my guy, you mm-hmm. know, my mentor, so to speak, mm-hmm. and I said, hey, I think the transmitter's off. And he goes, well, did you turn it back on? And I'm like,
I did.
So he walked me through turning it back on. It was a couple of switches, and boom, we're back on the air. And I was like, okay, thanks.
Now you're an engineer.
I'm an engineer. Right.
So you started that. When did you go from the heart of the Mississippi Delta radio phenom into TV?
Well, it's a short story. I worked at a couple of different radio stations in Clarksdale. I went from Clarksdale to, where did I go after Clarksdale? Cleveland, Mississippi.
Okay.
Then went to Yazoo City, then back to Greenville, Mississippi. Mm-hmm. And it was in Greenville, Mississippi, where I saw the local, it was a fledgling TV station. It was a CBS affiliate, WXVT. And I saw people on there, and I went, you know,
I'm better.
I could do that. You know, and so I went, this is not how you, by the way, for you folks wanting to get into TV, this is not how you get into TV. But I walked into the TV station one day and asked if I could see the general manager, and he happened to be standing right there. He said, yeah, come on back. He was a good old Southern boy. Come on back. And he took me to his office. I said, I'm interested in TV. He said, well, let's get you on a test. And let's see how you do. So he put me on a test. I read some sports, and he hired me right there as his weekend sports anchor.
When you walked in.
Walked in.
You walked out with the job.
Yep. I told him. I mean,
yeah, so disregard what Bill said, because that does not happen like that.
This is not how it works.
Then y'all went to Doe's Eat Place or something, got something?
Yeah, just, you know, he just hired me right there.
In the station?
In the station.
Not even lunch meeting?
No lunch, no nothing. Just, you know, that's how it worked.
Wow. But you walked out there and said, well, I'm glad I went in there.
Well, and that story continues. I was sports director, for lack of a better word, for the weekends, because I was the only guy with a camera and the only one there covering sports.
By default, you were the director, yes.
That was the default. So I went around shooting whatever was happening, sports, and I'd do a sports cast in the evening a couple times at night. And finally, I did that for about maybe 6 months, and I got tired of it. And I was working 7 days a week. I was still mm-hmm. on the radio. And so I told him, I said, I'm gonna quit. And he had just hired a new news director. And he said, the news director was like, well, you'll never work in broadcasting again. If you quit this job now, you'll never work in broadcasting again. 2 weeks after that, the general manager fired the news director, who was also the main anchor of the station, and called me up and said, I just fired the news director. You want to be my main anchor? And I said, is that a full-time job? He's like, it sure is. I said, okay. And jumped into, and again, folks.
I thought you would never work in the business
again. That's not how you get a main anchor job in TV, but that's how it happened to me.
Don't do as he says. But that's crazy.
But it was, I kind of backed into TV in a way and stuck with it ever since. So here we are.
Yeah, and then you come to Mobile, it feels like forever ago.
25 years ago.
Is that what it was?
Yes, 25 years exactly. I was in TV in Greenville for a couple of years. I went to Evansville, Indiana, and stayed there for 15 years. My kids were growing up. Schools were good.
Mm-hmm.
So we stuck around, and it was a good station. And finally got the itch and wanted to come south again, and Mobile was calling, and here we are.
Nothing with the Delta. I'll spend some time in the Mississippi Delta.
Oh, the Delta's great.
But if you had jump ball, the beaches and Gulf Coast kind
of. Well, and I used to come down here at high school, you know, after I could actually drive and stuff. And we'd road trip down here and go to Biloxi or
you didn't get in Gulf trouble Shores. Down here, did you?
No, not a bit.
Y'all believe that? So you do that, you get in TV, and then, you know, one of the things, like, I think the last time you were in, too, we're talking about books.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And there's a lot of people say, one day I'm going to write a book.
Yeah.
This is why I'm always impressed with authors, because there's a lot of us say, one day I'm going to write a book, and the day never comes. But there's some of y'all that say, one day I'm going to write a book, and then you do it.
Yeah. Yeah. I can tell you why people say that, having written a book or three. Because it's hard.
Mm-hmm.
It's very hard to do. And so people may start it and, you know, get into the one or two paragraphs or one or two chapters, and then it just kind of sits there. It just kind of walks away. And it's happened to me. It happens to me all the time.
Yeah, what's neat, though, is, you know, having to write every day for your job, right? Does at least have some mental muscle.
A little bit.
You know, does it give you, you think it gives you an advantage over somebody who doesn't have to sit down and write every day?
It may, or it may be a detriment just because you don't want to write.
True, you've been doing it, yeah.
You've been doing it, yeah. And so it's fun if you let it be. And if you don't think of it as a job, which a lot of people do, you know, if I'm going to write this.
Well, I heard you had to do that. You had to get up at a certain time every day and write.
That's what they say. Or you just pick when and where you want to write and start writing.
So in pure Bill Riles fashion, you did it the other way.
I just backed into it.
Coming right back with our buddy Bill Riles right here on FM Talk 106.5.
You're listening to Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
And I'm reading through some of these texts here, Bill. People like Chris said, spend every morning with Bill, drinking my coffee, tell him thank you, bon voyage. Well done, Bill. You got a lot. You do have, somebody says, it's my last chance. It's not your last chance. Maybe I'll even get him back on here, but you're going to be through the end of the year, right?
Still? Yeah, December 19th is my go-to date, and that's only because that's the week I'm going on vacation for Christmas, and then after Christmas, that's my Christmas present to myself, I guess.
Pretty good Christmas present.
Yeah. Yeah, so I mean, it's
what's
bittersweet.
What's Tony think about it?
Miss Tony is sort of okay with it.
Okay.
No, she's very supportive, and you know, we had talked about it for a good while, and I let my bosses know this past June that was my intention, because I didn't want to leave them hanging, and I wanted to give them plenty of time to find somebody that could, somebody to replace me. But I think... I'll still probably do some things with WKRG, but just not get up in the middle of the night for them.
Yeah, well, there's doing mornings means doing nighttime.
It's tough.
It is very, very tough.
It's a tough job. I mean, it's not, you know, heavy lifting once you get up. I mean, look, if you have a job and you can say that the hardest part of my job is getting up out of bed every morning, that's probably not a bad job.
Right.
And in my case, it's a great job. But you know, after 20 years of doing that, it kind of takes a little of the wind out of you. So that's really the real, and that's exactly what I told my bosses that I'm why I made this decision. And I can't.
Yeah, and that's what's all. And what's cool too is knowing you like a dude that there's not going to be lack of something to do. You're not going to be jockeying the Barca Lounger. I know you too well.
No, there's.
You're a creative guy. You do
have
things.
Lots of things going on.
Yeah.
And lately, it's been bluegrass music.
Man, you the other day get on a banjo. I mean, playing a guitar is one thing that's impressive, but getting on a banjo, I mean, for somebody who's not musically inclined like me, it looks like that's like from driving a go-kart to driving a Ferrari.
You know, I am not a banjo player. I just picked
you're
it
picking
up
on it pretty
about
good.
3 months ago. And
make me sick.
But I've been playing guitar since I was like 8 years old.
Right.
And so I learned.
It translates for the banjo?
Not very well.
Okay.
Some of the finger picking a little bit, but it's all the notes are in a different place. So it's I just got to find. You know, my banjo, I hope my banjo folks will weigh in and, you know, tell me it gets a little easier because.
Does banjo picking get easier?
I do practice it more now than I do guitar, but I'm trying to learn it, and so it's been fun. And I equate it. Nobody gets this, but I equate playing the banjo to somebody on a jet ski. Because you never see people on a jet ski unhappy. You know, they're...
True, yes.
You know, and,
right.
And you see people playing banjo, and they look serious, but they're really happy. Yeah, because it's fun.
Because real happy because you're in a state of, oh my gosh, where's my next
just,
note?
Or? You're just having fun. You know, it's just so much
More
fun.
Than a guitar.
Well, I mean, I like playing guitar, too. It's fun as well, but and I'll sit, I can pick up a guitar, and I might sit there with it 15 minutes or 2 hours.
Mm-hmm.
You never know. It just depends on what's coming up. But so I'm looking forward to kind of collaborating with some people once I get out of this.
Going to be
hours.
An album coming out? Album?
No, not yet, but who knows? We'll see.
I've
done some
standby.
Recording at home.
Cool.
Yeah.
Well, I'm waiting for that. What about, you got like those three novels. What about some more? Are we going to stay with?
I've got a couple in the digital drawer, so to speak. And
staying with same themes? Or
yeah, I like to write crime fiction mm-hmm. because over the years, I've seen too much funny stuff in real life, crime-wise, right. that, you know, you'd think would be unbelievable. But what they say, you know, truth is stranger than fiction.
Yeah.
And so you can, if you can write it like that, that's fine. You know, based on ripped from today's headlines.
100%. Another thing, you know, I've talked about is your love for our veterans and your service.
Oh, yeah.
You know, that's a thing that as I watch this, your support, whether it be, gosh, I'm thinking about honor flight days and all that through this. It's important to you.
It is. And I just posted today on Facebook one of my reminiscences, as it were, as I go down the trail here, heading out the door. I've been trying to post some of the highlights of my career. One of the biggest, if not the biggest, was the Honor Flight South Alabama. And Dr. Barry Booth, of course.
Being honored. Yeah.
Yeah.
What a guy.
I mean, he is such a great guy, and he is such a staunch supporter of veterans. And it was just watching him, listening to him, talking to him, you know, about what the message is about veterans. And so Honor Flight was a big deal. We took almost 1,000 veterans. I said we. He mm-hmm. and his hand-picked staff of veterans took almost 1,000 World War II veterans to see their memorial in Washington. And the thing is, none of those people, a lot of those people would never have made it on their own.
Nope.
You know, due to
physical,
time-wise,
ability to go.
Exactly.
Yeah, I don't want that to be forgotten, what happened there. We talk about our greatest generation. There are people here that stood up and made sure those people got to see that monument.
Exactly, and some of those folks, you know, I'm convinced that some of those folks, knowing that they were going on this honor flight, waited to make that trip and then allowed themselves to pass on to mm-hmm. to the next world, you know. So it was just the stories that we got to tell, the stories that we heard that no one had ever heard from these veterans, you know, what they went through. And some of them couldn't tell you what they ate for breakfast that morning, but they could sure tell you what happened on, you know, December 7, 1941 or, mm-hmm. or any other date during that period that they were serving, you know. So it was just to hear those stories and to be able to tell those stories was just a tremendous honor, and I enjoyed it so much.
I mean, it's the matter-of-factness, and the few that I got to be around back then, the matter-of-factness of the story, they'd be talking to you about whatever, and then you ask them, oh, by the way, yes, there I was, and they lay out a scenario that would crush a soul.
Oh,
that they were, and they're like, yeah, and this day I did such and such, and, you know, my group would, you're like, oh, my gosh, you're just telling me like you're telling me a trip y'all went on last year.
Yeah, it's I had the guy telling me about sticking his head up out of a trench and hearing that distinct German machine gun that they have. I forget what it's called.
MP-34.
Something like that. It's a very distinct sound. And he said, you know, I'd stick my head out of the trench and I'd hear that, those rounds whizzing by. Had another guy that was on an aircraft carrier, I believe it was the Yorktown. They got torpedo bombed, saw the plane hit the ship, was blown 60 feet away or something like that. And those kind of stories, you know. And a lot of those guys didn't tell those kind of stories to even the people closest to them. you know, their family. Oh, Robert Andre, who just passed away just this past year, he was featured in the Morgan Freeman documentary about the black tankers in World War II. We go out to his place and listen to him tell that story. He had not even told his family that story until maybe 10 years prior to telling us.
Wow.
You know, that's a long time. That was 40, 50, maybe 50, 60, 70 years.
Without telling that story.
Without even talking about, you know, his experiences during the war. And, of course, after that, he's opened up about it, and everybody's telling his story. And it's a tremendous story. You know, he got wounded. They buried him. His comrades buried him in the ground so they'd keep him out of enemy hands. They knew he was wounded. And about 10, 12 hours later, they came back and got him, recovered him.
I mean, for us to think about what those men went through. Unbelievable.
It's tremendous.
It is tremendous.
It's just a tremendous effort, and so respect to all of them, yeah.
Respect to you, Bill Riles. Man, thank you for doing what you've done for all these years, 50 years in broadcast, but it's not over yet.
No, it's not over. I've got a few more days, counting, 45.
Yeah.
Tick, 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 tick.
But 45, and then still, you're not going to disappear. You're not going to be, I know you. You're
no,
not going to be
I'll
sitting
be
at that.
I'm right here.
I'll be sitting in the Bark Lounger.
In Mobile. I'll be bouncing around, hoping to see a lot of people out and about in the evenings.
Yeah,
he'll be in the evening.
He'll be up late, like 9 o'clock or something,
something
like that.
Something like that.
Thank you, Bill.
You betcha.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
All right, 135 FM Talk 106.5 Midday Mobile. Glad to have you along. 343-0106. How you get in touch? Our buddy Patrick Jump joins us here in just a second. First up on the this is a very Robertsdale segment here because Patrick in the Robertsdale area, and so is my buddy Blaine Price at Paris Tractor. Hey, Blaine.
Hi, Sean.
And if you didn't notice, hunting season, well, bow season's here. Hunting season's, gun season starts in just, 2 weeks now? Yeah, 22nd?
That's right.
If somebody is thinking about getting their planting finished or doing it in a better way, you've got packages. I like this, too. Explain to folks about, tractor packages, what that means and what you get with a package from Paris Tractor.
We do. So we have new packages that you can buy, or we have packages that you can just rent. The ones you can buy, we've got all the compact tractors in stock right now. We can package them however you choose, whether you want implements with it or you don't want implements. We've got all the implements from Land Pride in stock right now. All qualifies for zero interest financing through Kubota. As well as when you buy a tractor and at least two implements, we throw in a 7x20 trailer for free to kind of form up that package for you. So when you have it loaded up, ready to roll when you get here. Like I said, zero interest financing still available through Kubota. So our other packages for you to rent, we've got these tractors in our rental fleet, all the different implements to go along with them in order to plant food plots or just do work around the house. We've got trailers so we can have it hooked up, all packaged together, ready for you to go rent it for, you know, just a day, a week, a weekend, whatever you choose.
Yeah,
we've got those available right now.
Yeah, just paint the picture for y'all. If y'all got to get work done at the camp or wherever, whatever you got a tractor job for, you call Paris Tractor. That's how it works. They get you the tractor, the implements you need, and like Blaine said, you just back up to the trailer.
That's stuff right. Done,
strapping down's done, back up, and then you're off.
That's right. We'll hook you up, and you're on your way.
I like it. Tell folks how to find you, and talk about the website, too, which is pretty cool.
Right. So we're right here at Paris Tractor in the middle of Robertsdale on Highway 59. Come by see us Monday through Friday, 8 to 5. You can give us a call at 251-947-4171 and our website online, paristractor.com.
Good stuff, Blaine. We'll talk soon.
Thanks, Sean.
All right. There goes Blaine in Robertsdale at Paris Tractor. And speaking of which, actually, I don't know where he is right now because I haven't kept a tracker on him, but he's going to be somewhere in our area. It's our buddy Marine veteran Patrick Jump from Warrior Legacy Ranch joining us now. Are you in Robertsdale now? Where are you?
I'm in Pensacola.
See, I knew it's but generally, you buy in the greater Robertsdale Metroplex.
Yeah. So, you know, I started the morning at the Baldwin County Courthouse helping out a veteran this morning. And we're getting him over to Vets Recover through, you know, a partnership that John and I have kind of worked out. And, we're just, I stay busy, as you know.
Guaranteed. And I want to talk about this, a couple aspects. I want to talk about, of course, Warrior Legacy Ranch and what y'all are doing. You mentioned John Kilpatrick, Veteran of the Year. You're Veteran of the Month as well, honored by Senator Tuberville. I want to talk about your, and I start this in every discussion with veterans, and you know this, you've probably been through it with me before, but how you enlisted, why you enlisted, what that was like. I mean, you came from a military family, right?
Yeah, so both my grandparents, my mom's father was the Deputy Director of Transportation for the United States Air Force. I think at one point I heard he was the longest serving Deputy Director of Transportation. And he actually gave, like, oddly enough, he gave Fred Smith his first government contract, which gave Fred Smith the ability to start FedEx.
Wow. So,
my whole life, I didn't know that, or his whole life, he didn't, no one in the family knew that until Fred Smith actually came to his funeral.
Wow.
And this, like, random guy gets up and talks about the whole experience. Sure. I have the whole story. He actually sent me the copy of the eulogy. So I have that whole story kind of saved in place from my grandfather. And then, my father's dad was in the Army during World War II. He served during the Japanese occupation, or the U.S. occupation of Japan. So he was there for that. And then my father was a Marine, or is a Marine, I suppose, in Vietnam from 1966 to 1969. So
then
my grandfather wanted me to join the Air Force. My other grandfather said the Army. My dad said the Marine Corps. And I was pretty confident coming out of high school that I had no idea what I wanted to do or what I wanted to be. And I had two older sisters that I had seen. They had changed their major in college two or three times. And I was like, oh, well, you know what? Let's give the Marine Corps a shot. So I actually went in on the delayed entry program on September 1st of 2001 during my senior year of high school. I think I actually swore in like on the 3rd, but I had left on the 1st. And then September 11th happened, and I can remember walking in to, it was my government class of all classes, and they had this, you know, tube television hang on the wall, and the first plane had already hit, and, you know, my teacher had the news on, and he's watching, and just as I looked up at the TV to kind of see what was going on, the second plane hit the tower, and I can remember my government teacher, Mr. Barrett, looking at me saying, "Didn't you just join the Marine Corps? You sure you want to do that?" And, you know, while everyone was kind of working through and recovering from the events of those days, my recruiter had called and said, "Hey, are you still in on this? Because, you know, don't worry, the war will be over before you even graduate high school. Look at how fast the first Gulf
went." Right.
And, obviously, it wasn't, because I ended up deploying to Afghanistan in 2004, and then I went to Fallujah, Iraq in 2005. And then, you know, all the way through the Afghan withdrawal in 2021. So it's one of America's longest wars, certainly not its costliest war, but I think the effects of it, with 100 and... I think I got the new updated number when I was in Las Vegas. I think it's like 164,000 veteran suicides in 2001.
Unbelievable.
And so that puts it into perspective of how impactful the global war on terror has been.
What do you think? I've talked about this some before, but what do you think it is with GWAT? And that versus, you know, prior, I mean, not that this didn't exist in prior wars, but what nature do you think has caused such a problem with our veterans?
Well, you know, it's funny. When I was in Las Vegas, I had the pleasure to sit down and meet Jason Redman. And, you know, you even look up Jason Redman. He's a Navy SEAL that was shot in the face in 2007. He's had, like, 100 different surgeries to kind of get him back to normal. And after he met with us on that Sunday, he ended up the following Monday or the Monday after, like, well, I'm trying to recover from being home and being jet lagged from Las Vegas. He was in like Washington, D.C. running the marathon. So that guy's a machine.
Wow.
But yeah, I'm like trying, I even took Monday off of work and this guy's out running a marathon. Jason had a pretty good perspective that I'm going to start kind of leaning into. And I think it's where, there's a push for veterans right now, and you can see it, and you'll get some different opinions, and I'm sure this will light up your text line too, where there's a push for veterans to get their disability claim, right? Like, mm-hmm. You know, everybody wants that disability claim. And so part of it is, okay, we're dealing with our things. Those are things that you earn. That disability is obviously something that you earn through, you know, like a modern day worker's comp in a normal job.
Mm-hmm.
But, and we experience things that most people don't experience.
Guaranteed.
I think where the difference is we lean into thinking that, okay, so you get the disability tech. Now do I have to continue to play the card to make sure that I keep the disability check? And, you know, for people like me, so I'm 100% disabled, and I still go to work every single day. And not only do I go to work every day, but I run a nonprofit every day as well.
You work like hell, yeah.
But I think my work in the nonprofit is one of the things that helps me heal and get over, not get over, but deal with some of the traumas that I've had in my life.
Is it that mission, Patrick? You know, I mean, like you and so many of our friends.
Is.
I mean, it's different for different veterans, but y'all have like, you find a mission, y'all continue on that.
Yeah, I think it's more than a mission. It's a purpose. You know, in the military, you have a purpose. You serve a purpose from, especially like, you know, I come from the infantry world. So whether you're not just a rifleman or an A gunner or a team leader, that person is then part of a squad who's part of a section, who's part of a platoon, who's part of a company, who's part of a battalion, and all the way up to, you know, regiment and division and everything in the Marine Corps. But it's having that purpose. And something to go accomplish. And maybe some veterans forget their training. I have a guy I served with who's one of those protesters in D.C., and he's massively protesting against the president and against the National Guard's occupation. And regardless of how you feel about that politically, he's the guy that's like screaming and yelling at people. And I'm just having regular conversations with politicians from this morning all the way through to, I mean, you know where I'm going tomorrow.
Mm-hmm.
I have regular conversations and I try to educate them from our side, but I do it calmly and professionally. And it's the old adage. I think, you know, you collect more
flies
with honey than you do with vinegar.
Yep.
And they're more willing to listen when you have a conversation. So even if I don't agree with them politically, I talk to these politicians because I have a goal that I want to accomplish for our veterans. And if they're the leading candidate in the party or in the race, that's who I want to attach myself to because they're going to be in the position of making a change. And that's who I want to try to educate. And I'm talking to both sides all the time. I think that's important to just remember your training. You're not going to go yell at a general and like scream at a general when you were in the military. You're going to request mask and say, "Hey, sir, you know, can we have a conversation?" And you talk to them, and maybe that's the key. Maybe it's it's just being willing to remember your training and continue the mission afterwards.
That's a few minutes left here, too. And, of course, you'll be back early, often, whenever you want to shadow the door around here to talk about Warrior Legacy Ranch. But somebody somehow has not heard us talking about it before. Like, what's your elevator speech? They say, hey, Patrick, what is this Warrior Legacy Ranch? What do y'all do? Why do y'all do it?
Yeah, so I say it's two parts. One, we have the national program where we just released all of the paperwork for it, where veterans can sign up for a reunion to reconnect with the people that they served with. We're building a 7,000-square-foot barn dominium. And what we just rolled out is any company can come in. We have 12 sponsorships available at $5,000 a year. That's cheaper than an I-10 billboard. And they can decorate and billboard out one of those 12 rooms. That's going to pay for construction. And that $5,000 a year is on a 10-year commitment. So it ends up being $50,000, but it's good for 10 years. So we're looking for those people right now. So all you business owners out there that want to get involved, this is the best way to do it. The best way to get involved. The other way is the Gulf Coast Veterans Community Resource Center, which we partnered with Panini Pete and the Baldwin County Home Builders to build. We break ground on that in January. And we're really excited about it. It'll finally give us a space to continue our mission instead of meeting at random places and having to meet in the middle of grass fields right now.
Right.
We'll actually have a building to really start affecting some change in this area. That's my elevator speech.
Well, and it's a great one. And people go to the website or the Facebook page, both for Warrior Legacy Ranch, and get more info. But it's an amazing thing you've done. That when you and I first met, you told me about the idea. I said, well, there's got to be those. Patrick, those things are all over the country, right? You're like, no. I'm like, really? It really left me slack-jawed. And it takes, veterans like you to continue to help, to do this. Like, yeah, I mean, you and John interacting today. I mean, here's two veterans that continue to serve veterans out there. And I'm proud to know both of y'all.
Yeah, and I'm pretty sure John and I saved a life today. John talks about the amount of lives he saved, and it's true. And I kind of just let it brush off my shoulder, right, until you said that. And I was like, oh, yeah.
Yeah, you saved a human being's life today.
Saved a life today.
It's an amazing, amazing thing y'all continue to do out there, and we'll continue to talk with you about it. Patrick, thank you. I mean, thank you for your service and your continued service to our country.
Yeah, absolutely. Thanks.
All right, brother. I'll be seeing you soon.
All right. Bye.
All right. There goes Marine Patrick Jump from Warrior Legacy Ranch. Coming right back. More Midday Mobile.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
It's 1:57 FM Talk 106.5 at Midday Mobile. Be not the battleship tomorrow. That's cool. Especially here on the, seeing distance of Veterans Day. Always great to be at Battleship Memorial Park and aboard the Mighty A. That means, though, truncated, which I remember when I first heard that word as a kid. I was like, does that mean it has a trunk? And I was told to be quiet in class. But a truncated version of Midday Mobile. So we'll be on from noon to 1, and then for reasons unknown to me, I hand the keys over to my buddy Tom Claxton for the Scuttlebutt Radio Network, a Veterans Day edition from 1 to 2 aboard the Mighty A tomorrow. So y'all check that out. Also coming up on Thursday, Veteran of the Year, John Kilpatrick joins me. We're just talking about, Patrick and I are just talking about him. He's going to be on, plus many other veterans to come all month long in November. It's Veterans Month here at FM Talk 106.5. All right, grab a couple texts before we hand the keys over to Paul Feinbaum. Billy D said, that was really cool, dude. Yeah, he's a... You're talking about, you were listening to my buddy Bill Rouse. He is a cool dude. He's truly a renaissance man. I mean, you know him as a broadcaster and a journalist, but the guy is a musician, a writer. It's just one of the good guys. And what a way to get into this business. I mean, when you're doing radio in the Mississippi Delta, and you end up making it to Mobile, it's cool stuff. This from this is CB Carl. Said, bless Patrick for his work. When people say to me, thank you for your service, I always answer that I consider it a contribution because I was a member of a battalion. We all worked together for our missions. By the way, we were the best battalion in the Atlantic Fleet, NMCB1. There you go. Yeah, it just amazes me, the continuing to give back. Patrick's one of many. But yeah, right here at home, this Warrior Legacy Ranch thing is not around the country. It's not like they're everywhere. It's the idea right here. And just proud to know these men and women. And we'll see you out at the Veterans Day Parade a week from today. So make sure you stop on in, visit with us before checking out the parade. All right, Feinbaum next.